The Guardian.
The Guardian has partnered with audible.co.uk to offer listeners a free audiobook when you sign up for a one-month, no-commitment trial of the Audible service. Audible has over 50,000 audiobook titles available to download. Go to guardian.co.uk/audible for further details.
Football Weekly. Today, drama in the Eurozone with Champions League denouement. Will group games come to a sticky end for Lampard & Co? Not an Ia Nafia reference. Can Man City defeat their mighty German opponents, Schadenfreude? We preview the midweek action and look at the weekend's big talking points too. Martin O'Neill at the Black Cats, the Yakubu at Rovers success story. There's Sid in Spain, tweets, posts, and the word in Italy with a Serie A game that was unwatchable, literally. All of that plus Fernando Duarte's goodbye to Socrates in today's Football Weekly. Hi, everyone, and thanks ever so much for joining us. We have the vocal talents here of James Horncastle.
Hello, James.
Hi, Tom Lutz.
Hello.
And Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Hi. Crucially, all three panel members sound different this week, because I know that does distress listeners when they can't work out which person it is they should be complaining about.
Who sounds similar?
Well, lots of people do.
Apparently me and Jacob Steinberg do.
Yeah. Says Tom Lutz.
Yeah, not yeah. Jacob Steinberg.
Not Jacob Steinberg. I don't think you sound that similar, do you?
No, it's an anti-Semitic comment. From
oh, people. Really?
Yeah, just because we're both Jewish.
When will
I'm
they learn?
I'm not even properly Jewish.
Ebony and Ivory. How many years is it since they released that and still?
Yeah, the message hasn't got through.
Never mind.
That wasn't about Jewish people, was
yeah,
it?
Yeah, Barry, yeah. Come
and
on.
And it's not like there's any problem with racism anymore. Especially
right.
Especially not football.
Right. Now, item one, controversially on our agenda today, is, well, the big game of the weekend. No, the clash at the erstwhile St James's Park, Newcastle, Chelsea. A game we all watched, I think, no?
Very good.
Yeah, very good game. Except from Newcastle's point of view, of course.
Yeah, no, I thought they were quite unlucky because, obviously, Luiz should have been sent off.
Obviously. Does anyone debate that at all?
No, not really.
Mike Dean debates it. Yeah. And he was the person who didn't send him off, so his was the only opinion that mattered.
And he now said he should have sent him off.
Well, the last I heard, the reason he gave, because I was very curious to see what his justification for not sending him off would be, and he said that he didn't know if Demba Ba would be in full control of the ball, but Demba Ba didn't have a chance to get in full control of the ball,
yeah.
Which was at his feet, basically, because he was hauled down before he could control it. So, yeah, it was a wrong decision. I don't think you can defend it or debate it. It was just wrong. And could have had a huge impact on the game. Newcastle ended up losing 3-0. Didn't deserve to lose 3-0, I don't think. They kind of fell apart after they hit the woodwork for the second time.
Three times in all.
And yeah. They also had an effort cleared off the line. So, you know, fair play to them. They gave it a right good lash, and the scoreline didn't do them justice
at all. It flattered Chelsea. Well, you worry for Newcastle now. Not only have they lost their unbeaten record, but they've lost their unbeaten record at home, but so much of their success supposedly was built upon having the settled back four.
Mm-hmm.
We now learn that not only is Coloccini gone, but also
Taylor.
Steven Taylor for the rest of the season, is it?
Yeah, I think he's ruptured his Achilles tendon, so he's going to be out for the foreseeable future.
Oh, dear. Is that Newcastle, is that them done then?
Although the back four's been disrupted, Tim Krul showed again that he's one of the best keepers in the Premier League. And
in the world, I would say.
Yeah, possibly the world, seeing as the Premier League's the best league in the world. I think Chelsea got an inordinate amount of abuse for that game. They did win it 3-0 and people were like, oh, well, you know, it could easily have been 3-0 or 4-3 to Newcastle, but Krul kind of kept them in it at times, and Daniel Sturridge had four or five decent chances, and he didn't really mess them up, though. Good saves from Krul as well.
Krul was outstanding. I thought one of the Chelsea's goals was straight after Taylor's injury, before he could get off, and they just Torres burst past him and then seemed to screw it up and then square it. Yeah, it's a shame because Kabay, who's been one of their best players of the season so far, has been a revelation as a signing, had a bit of a nightmare as well. I mean, he gave away the penalty and then he was the one who was caught napping for, he lost Mata, who then put the ball in for Drogba to score with the header. Mata with that lovely piece of skill on the byline where he flicked it past, who was it, Simpson?
The Newcastle player, yeah. okay, there you go. Well, as you say, impressive though from Chelsea, becoming the first side to win there. They moved back into the top four.
It was interesting actually when Lampard got hooked, he was most displeased. And the talk since now has been of divisions in the Chelsea camp. It was also notable that when Torres set up the goal for Kalou, Kalou scored and promptly turned away from Torres, and as if he wasn't welcomed in the celebrations. Perhaps I'm reading too much into it, but the talk of divisions in the camp and Didier Drogba saying they need to sort of sort things out would suggest that that all is not well at Stamford Bridge.
Well, Anelka and Alex, in the meantime, training separately.
Yeah, that's a weird one.
Hmm.
And even more weirder is perhaps Anelka's coming out and saying that he has no problem with it whatsoever because he's a good professional and he'll just get on with it. He'll be sold in January, possibly going to the States, I think.
Montreal. The Montreal Impact.
Also Canada, sorry.
Yeah. You can speak French there as well.
Very, very true. Well, of course, a big week for Chelsea with Valencia coming up. But we'll get Sid's view on what the prospects are for that match very shortly. But they're not the only team in a slightly precarious position vis-a-vis their Champions League campaign. Of course, the Manchester sides are also with much to be settled this week. Let's have a look at what they got up to in the weekend action. United, another 1-0 win. Is it seven games now since they scored more than one goal in a match?
Yeah, and Hernandez has scored four of those goals and obviously will be out for a month with ankle ligament damage.
Yeah.
So
how big is that, James?
Well, he's been a very important player last year and he scored 20. I think he's already got six this season. If you are only winning by one goal, and I think if you look at the other games in that run, it's been a Fletcher maybe scored one, and there was an own goal, I think maybe Wes Brown.
It certainly hasn't been Rooney, because he hasn't got any in eight.
I think the good news is that they can just roll in Welbeck for Hernandez now, and I mean he was really good at the start of the season. So
yeah, and he had a goal disallowed at the weekend. He just mistimed his run. Rooney played him in. I guess one of the reasons Rooney hasn't been so prolific, if you like, is he seems to have a slightly different role. He seems to be playing a little bit deeper. But yeah, I guess it is a bit of a concern.
It might be, yeah. Also, Shea Given, how serious was his injury for Aston Villa?
I think he just chased to close down a long ball to Ashley Young.
Yeah.
And just tweaked his hamstring. McLeish was hoping it was a grade one, whatever that means. But it means he'll be back in, I don't know, short time. So.
All right. Meantime, Man United are off in Switzerland this midweek, taking on Basel in a game that, if they win, they'll be safely through. Possibly in second place in the group, though, because if Benfica beat Otolo Galati, as you think they might, then they'll top the group. But they did have trouble with the Swiss side, didn't they, United, last time? They were 2-0 up. Then the Swiss side pegged it back to 3-2 before Ashley Young finally earned Man United what proved at the time a campaign possibly saving point. What's going to happen this time, Tom Lutz?
Well, United have got that very good away record in the Champions League. I think that 3-3 draw was partly just Man United twatting about a bit in the last time. So their concentration was terrible.
Right.
And I just don't think Ferguson will let them
twice about.
Yeah.
Right.
This time around. So I think it'll be a 1-0 win.
Right, another 1-0 win, really?
Yeah, yeah.
What do you think, Barry?
Well, normally you'd expect United to have little difficulty swatting aside a team like Basel, who are all right, but not up to much in the cosmic scheme of things. But
they're number one in Switzerland.
Great.
Oh, right. Yeah, okay.
But United's performances of late have been so sort of sluggish and... Sorry, your hand is raised.
No, I was prepared to wait for the end of your sentence, but since you stopped anyway. De Gea, why was he not in goal at the weekend? Why was Lindegaard in goal?
I think it was just to give Lindegaard another chance. I think he did well. I think he made a really good save off Collins, was it, at one point?
Interesting.
He's a big talker, isn't he, Lindegaard? He always comes out and, you know, giving Jones sort of, you know, excellent player. And what he said in the past that he hadn't come to United to just pick his nose. Probably why he played yesterday.
Yeah, all right then.
It'd be hard to pick your nose with those big gloves on.
Gloves. Very true. Okay, Basel, were you happy with that, Tom's prediction of the game?
I would expect United to win, but I wouldn't be hugely surprised. If they play as poorly as they have been of late, they're going to get caught out at some point because they keep grinding out these 1-0 wins against teams that should possibly be doing better against them.
Michael Cox pointed out the other day that United are unbeaten away from home in the league so far this season, but they haven't played any of the other top six. That's including them, not Liverpool, away from home. They've played Chelsea at home, they've played Newcastle at home, etc., etc.
So City at home with brilliant consequences.
Yes, with brilliant consequences. So perhaps once they do go on their travels to one of those teams, you know, they might get come unstuck.
A draw will be enough for them anyway, United. So they should be all right. They should be all right. What about Man City, though? I mean, first of all, terrific performance against Norwich. The Aguero goal, fantastic. Oh, that Yaya Toure goal, that was fantastic as well. The Adam Johnson goal was great. The Balotelli goal, the shrug.
Spallotelli.
Spallotelli, which means shoulder O'Telly. Right. I'm not going to make the obvious.
He sounds Irish now.
He does, yeah.
Which, I didn't see it, but apparently it sent Garth Crooks on the BBC into a total meltdown.
Yeah.
He was so outraged by the impertinence and arrogance of Balotelli, you know.
Worth it for that alone.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a brilliant goal. On it. So
the build-up was fantastic.
Yeah,
no? Yeah.
That ball in from Toure, squared by Johnson. Brilliant. Yeah, that's what I want to see. I want to see a Spallotelli.
But also, it wasn't just the great goals, but great team spirit. You know, this was the team that everyone said, oh, you can't buy team spirit, Man City. There's no feeling in the locker room. But there clearly is, because the way they all celebrate each other's achievements is really quite refreshing to see.
Particularly considering last year there was the Balotelli-Boateng training ground scuffle.
Oh, yeah.
There's the Tevez fiasco. But apart from that, it's a very solid group. I mean, I was looking last week into Mancini's time at Inter to see if you could draw parallels with his sort of Champions League woes there, threat of them going out of the group stage this time. The amount of arguments he has with players. Before the Inter were knocked out of the Champions League in 2008, I think, Liverpool, and he famously resigned afterwards and then said, no, I'm not going to resign. Figo had refused to come off the bench on that time, kind of going on strike. Tevez. Wears his heart on his sleeve. So for a dressing room to be relatively united, it's
perhaps because they all hate him. which is fine. If it works, that's fine. But they need, you know, once again, he needs to get that form in the Championship into the Champions League against Bayern, who have been lent Man United's training ground for the occasion, apparently, according to something I read last week. Yeah. But there you go. So what do you think?
Bayern haven't been that great in the league.
Well, they're back on top.
But they've lost two of their last three in the league, I think, and Schweinsteiger's had some problems. Injury problems as well, but even if they do win,
I can see Napoli getting a draw at Villarreal, especially the Italian papers were full of the fact that City have offered Villarreal large sums of inducements.
Yeah, well, that was De Laurentiis's suggestion.
Ah.
I don't think it was fact. I think it was more classic Italian dietrology, sort of you know, seeing things where there isn't anything. Conspiracy theorising.
Right, okay.
It's so unusual in football. Villarreal are not in the slightest bit interested in Champions League this season. Sid perhaps can confirm it.
But perhaps so.
And they're not doing very well in the league. They're 13th, like 14 points from 13 games. So,
well, let's wrap up part one there and go straight to Sid for more on that. And, of course, Valencia and one or two other issues after this. Hello, Sid Lowe in Spain.
Hello, James Richardson in near Earth orbit.
Correct. Correct again. And how's everything there with you? Where are you, Sid?
I'm in Madrid.
Good. Excellent. So many things to talk
and
about.
And the dog has just found a tennis ball, so I think we're in for trouble now.
Oh. Well, the tennis ball certainly is. Let's see if we can just use this moment of distraction to talk about one or two big issues. First of all, we were just talking about Villarreal. Are they going to offer Napoli any problems? And has there been any talk in Spain about large inducements offered by the backers of Man City?
Not yet, there hasn't, no.
Okay.
I'm sure that will come. I don't think Villarreal are likely to offer much opposition right now. They've got problems of their own. They had a little run where they started to come out of trouble to some extent, but they're still not playing. They're still not playing particularly well. I think the assumption has to be that they won't help out at all.
Man City going out of the Champions League. Extraordinary. What about Valencia? They need to score a goal at Stamford Bridge.
Yeah, and right now they would believe that they can. They're on a very, very good run indeed. I was in Valencia on Thursday. There goes the dog. I was in Valencia on Thursday talking to David Albelda about this, and he was quite honest in the sense that you know, he said the last thing we wanted was to have to go to London and play for our lives on the final game. The last thing we wanted was to have to do that against a Chelsea side that also needed to get a result. So that he, of course, now knows that it's one or the other and they can't both go through. When a couple of games ago, it looked like it might have been possible to engineer a situation in which the last game was almost a dead game in which both teams could benefit from the same result. So I think that's a real pity from Valencia's point of view. They weren't expecting to be in that position. But right now, the way they're playing, and perhaps to some extent as well, the way that Chelsea are playing, I think they have reason to be reasonably optimistic about it.
Lots of interesting stories behind this game. Juan Mata against his old club, but also that man Soldado, who scored again this weekend, no, against his rival for a place in the Spanish national side, Fernando Torres.
Yeah, and that's a very, very live issue at the moment in Spain. And with every passing week, it seems there's more and more people who are convinced that Soldado has to play for Spain rather than Fernando Torres. The difference in goals over the last 2 years is absolutely abysmal. I mean, that was a bit of Spanglish sneaking in there. Abysmal in the sense of
the size of an abyss
as opposed to something that's terrible. But I was looking it up yesterday, and I think I worked out, if I don't get this wrong, that Fernando Torres has scored 5 in the last 2 seasons for Chelsea. Roberto Soldado has scored 39 in the last 2 seasons for Valencia. And there's no doubt that if you're measuring it purely on goals, and it's not quite as simple as that, but if you're measuring it purely on goals, Soldado is more worthy of a place in the Spain team. It's not necessarily one or the other, but certainly the player who, when you look at it, is kind of most naturally in Soldado's way is Fernando Torres. And Soldado must be wondering to himself, what on earth do I have to do to get in?
No, he got, was it 3 in their last Champions League fixture, the 7-0 win against Genk?
We got 4 in that 4. Game. And he didn't play on Saturday night because Valencia obviously were resting some of their players ready for the Chelsea game. He came on and 2 minutes later scored the goal that they needed to win the game. They're playing really, really well, Valencia, now. And I think if it wasn't for the fact that we've got, you know, a Real Madrid side and a Barcelona side who rack up ridiculous numbers of points every year and just beat absolutely everybody in sight, then I think if it wasn't for that, we'd be looking at this Valencia team and saying, God, they're a really good side. But of course, they're overshadowed by the you know, just the enormity of the two sides above them.
All right. What were the scores for Real Madrid and Barcelona this weekend?
Barcelona won 5-0 at the Camp Nou, which means then their aggregate score at Camp Nou this season is 39-0.
Right.
Real Madrid went away to Sporting Gijón and won 3-0. It was one of those games that was supposed to be tough and supposed to be difficult and turned out not to be. After the game, Manolo Preciado, the Sporting coach, described Real Madrid as being in an alarming form. He meant alarming as in alarmingly good.
Right, OK. Sid, also since we last spoke, the Euro 2012 draw, which has put to Spain in a very tricky-looking group indeed.
I was watching the draw on Spanish TV, as you can imagine, and when it got to that last little pot, eventually after 4 hours of pissing about, they got to it, and obviously they knew that it was either going to be England or Italy. And perhaps this is a bit of a cuss for England, but the three commentators were going, oh, please don't make it Italy. We don't want Italy. We'd like it to be England, please. Please, we don't want Italy. And indeed, it was Italy. I think it's relatively tough, but the Spanish will believe that they'll get through, and then of course it then may well be England in the next round.
Yeah, what about Ireland though, Sid? I've not heard anything about Ireland yet.
Yes, yeah, no, you're a big racist.
And it probably won't entirely surprise you to know that the Spanish haven't been talking much about Ireland either.
Can be a tricky fixture, that one. No,
I don't mean that to sound, you know, desperately cocky in the sense that they're going, oh, those Irish, we don't need to worry about them. But the reality is they haven't been worrying about them.
Okay.
In their 3 meetings in European Championships, Spain and Italy have scored 1 goal between them, which would suggest their match is going to be as tight as a drum and rather dull.
Well, and not only that, but from the Spanish point of view, that they, you know, one of the responses to this draw was, you know, that Spain still have traditionally struggled against Italy and still do, in the sense that while they beat Italy in the European Championships, it was on a penalty shootout. They lost them in a recent friendly. They always have a respect for Italy, which is based on a complete lack of respect, in the sense that they believe that Italy are very, very strong. They're worried about Italy. They don't like the way Italians play football, or at least the stereotypical image they have of the way Italians play football. But that's rooted in concern. It's rooted in the fact that historically, of course, not now, but historically, Italy have been the stronger nation.
All right then, Sid. Anything else you want to talk to us about from the weekend?
Well, this weekend is all about Madrid and Barcelona,
because
it's finally the Clásico, and all the nonsense has started, and a lot of it's a bit petty and a bit tragic, and it's to open the papers and see that the lead story is evidence of a referee that doesn't like Real Madrid, according to one of the big Madrid newspapers. And this is based on 5 decisions they've managed to find from him going back 4 years. So, I mean, if he's had 5 decisions, all of which are not exactly screamingly punch-you-in-the-face obvious, if that's the best they can come up with, I think that tells you something about the level of the complaints. My particular favourite was Pep Guardiola talking about Isak Cuenca. Cuenca, who is a youth team player at Barcelona and has been given a chance in the last few weeks by Guardiola. And after the game, Guardiola was talking him up, saying the great thing about Cuenca is he knows how to play. He understands the collective side of the game brilliantly. And he's one of the few people I've seen that makes everyone around him better, including when he doesn't touch the ball. He understands that at times his lack of participation is the best thing he can do for others, which is obviously a quite a nice little line anyway. But then he goes on to say slightly more than that. He says, look, you lot might think that physically he's not the kind of person that girls really like. In other words, this guy's ugly. But when he's in his right place on the pitch, he plays ketekaya. In other words, he plays so well you shit yourself, he's that good. And this was the remark of this guy isn't very attractive to girls. So, of course, then the journalists get this. They go into the mix zone and they ask Cuenca what he thinks about what Guardiola said. And Cuenca says, oh, that's very nice of him. I'm really pleased. And they say, no, but like specifically this thing about how you're not attractive to girls. And Cuenca kind of blushed and stuttered a little bit and said, well, I suppose you'll have to ask the girls that.
By the way, listeners, sorry, this is the sauciest pub we've ever had in terms of harsh language.
Excretion, bodily functions and whatnot.
Anyway,
but reminds me of the famous story. Peter Crouch was asked, what would you be if you weren't a footballer? And he replied, a virgin.
Exactly. Yeah.
Sid, thanks ever so much for that. And we'll speak on Thursday.
Fantastic.
Thank you, Sid Lowe in Spain.
Cheerio.
A bit more Premier League, Sid Lowe in Spain there. Spurs, wow. Oof. More goals. 3-0 versus Bolton, although a controversy about the Cahill red card.
He wasn't the last man, was he?
Well, he might have been.
And
it was a long way up the field.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's pretty long.
And Chelsea won him. He's perfect for a high line.
Yeah.
So,
well, to reunite him with John Terry, because they have such a brilliant partnership with England or something. That's what I heard. Anyway, but Spurs, they are. They're still, what, third in the table? Still got that game in hand?
I think
they're not going to be burdened by Europe.
Exactly.
Either, I mean, even if Man City go out, they'll probably go into the Europa League, won't they? So they'll still have that on the sideline. And then Arsenal, whether they're title contenders or not, but they'll have Champions League football. Man United will probably go through. So that's one advantage.
It's interesting, though, because what Spurs have got, an 11-game unbeaten run. They're rolling with it, which I think is a record. Club record, anyway. City, if they go out of the Champions League, then, you know, although Mancini said he'd love to win the Europa League, they're going to have a relatively clean set of fixtures. And United, going back to United, I think they have the highest injury total at the moment, along with Bolton. So they've got players, you know, like Hernandez, obviously out, Raphael out, Fabio out, Anderson out. Mm. So United presumably will go through. It's going to be particularly at this festive period where games are coming thick and fast.
Absolutely, yeah. Interesting point. And Arsenal, meantime, they had a fine win. You were watching this, Barry.
They beat Wigan at their leisure. Mm. Wigan are awful. Mm. Really
how bad, Barry?
I would venture to say they're possibly, with the exception of the famous Derby County team that went down, they're the worst team I've ever seen in the Premier League. I'm basing that on three games I've seen this season, but they're just dire. Mm. And seemed totally clueless. No plan, no. They were abject against Arsenal on Saturday.
I think it's only going to get worse, isn't it? Because I think they play West Brom next and then it's Chelsea and Liverpool.
They could be well adrift. Arsenal taking on Olympiakos in Greece. Olympiakos battling Marseille for the other qualifying spot from that group. Now, the other big story in the Premier League, O'Neill's arrival at Sunderland, just in time to watch them lose at Wolves. Extraordinary game, this. That 26 seconds that could change the season.
Yeah, it's a game Sunderland should have won comfortably. They were goal up, got a penalty, which Seb Larson missed. It was an awful penalty. Like, it was really poorly struck. And he's a great striker of a ball. He takes great free kicks. And I don't know what the hell he was trying to do. He didn't place in the corner. He didn't try to smash it in. He just made it so easy for the keeper. And then Wolves went straight up the other end and scored. And that went on to win the game. So I would imagine Martin O'Neill was not best pleased, but at least now he knows what it is he has to deal with.
Well, 4 defeats in 5 now for the Black Cats. Well done to Wolves. Sunderland are now 1 point from the drop, and they have Blackburn next, a Blackburn team that's almost literally on fire. How about Ayig Beni Yakubu then?
It was brilliant at the weekend, but I mean, what was more disappointing about the Blackburn win was that the fans still persisted on the Steve Keen out bandwagon, even though their side had just scored four goals and a victory. They booed Yakubu when he went over to give Steve Keener a high five. So then you're effectively booing a player as well as a manager. And it's got to trickle down to the team as well. And Blackburn haven't been that bad. I mean, you know, other teams in their positions
are. They're in penultimate place, are they, in the team?
Yeah, but Martinez isn't getting that abuse, Coyle isn't getting that abuse, and it just seems like the Blackburn fans, or a section of them, have just decided they want him gone now, and even if they start to move up the table, they'll still be after him.
Right, well, it's a tricky area. This is a controversial topic, because you'll have lots of Blackburn fans now writing in saying that, you know, it's their club and that they have every right to not want Steve Keen to be in charge of it, which is fair enough.
We always like accuse fans of being fickle. Surely if they'd all of a sudden thought, brilliant, this is all rosy after winning 4-2, then we'd have had a go at them for not being principled.
Yeah, entirely coherent. Yeah.
I just don't see what the problem that they got so angry with him so quickly for. They should give him until February till he starts swearing at him.
All right. Well, they've given him a year already.
Yeah.
This is possibly what you're about to mention. Someone sent me what can only be described as a photograph of David Guest wearing a Blackburn shirt and holding up a Keen Out t-shirt, or, you know, one of those 100% Blackburn or 0%.
He's lost the Guest, lost the fans and David Guest now. So
how weird.
That was strange. Almost as weird as what I was going to mention, which was the leaked emails about Blackburn's, about the Venky Group's plans to win over the fans at the start of this group, the start of the season. They knew there was going to be trouble with the Blackburn supporters. So they thought, what we'll do is we'll organise a free concert at Ewood Park. Did you see this?
No.
Or we'll invite
Kelly Rowland and Akon
To come and perform in this free concert at the, 28,000 capacity Ewood Park?
Yeah.
And mysteriously, none of this ever took place. But it's a lovely world they live in, the Venky Group. Flights of fancy, ahoy. Anyway, there you go. But Yakubu, can we just, you know, can we stop and talk about him for a second? Feed the yak and he will score. Yeah. And they're both great keeping up their ends of the bargain, aren't they, really, by the looks of it?
And his scoring rate, that is slightly influenced by those four goals. But this season, he's nearly a goal a game.
I think before that, it was extraordinary, yeah.
They've got the sixth best attack in the league, I think.
Yeah. Shame about the defence, but yeah. Yeah, more goals than Liverpool. I know that doesn't mean everything, but they're exciting to watch. They're the Peterborough of the Premier League.
I mean, you say that. They are exciting to watch. They score a lot of goals, I guess. But they've had four against Arsenal, four the other day. But then I think they've attempted something like more long balls than anyone else as well.
I do know that statistically, according to Opta, whichever Opta it is, he is the most clinical striker in the Premier League this season, scoring with 41% of his attempts. Yakubu. Stoke, meantime, they finally got a win after a Europa League fixture.
Yeah, Tony Pulis called it a classic Stoke performance.
In what sense?
There was a dubious penalty claim, which I think was right not to be given, on Huth jumping into the back of Velios. Fellaini was getting all agitated at corners. Shawcross was all over him, and they went, did the sort of ram thing where they put head to head. But
rutting stags.
Yes.
But that would be quite warm if you were doing it with Fellaini with his big fuzzy mop.
Mm. Yeah.
I would imagine if a headbutt from him would probably quite, you know, sensuous experience.
Yeah, quite soft. Imagine if it was, Colaccini or David Luiz doing it with him. You'd get half an hour to entangle up.
Or a Suicotto as well. But beside the result, it was quite an emotional occasion because Gary Speed's dad, Roger, was there beforehand. We've seen quite a lot of tributes, be it the spontaneous applause at Swansea Aston Villa, the Leeds fans 11 minutes after the 11th minute. But this was very poignant because I think seeing his face, he couldn't believe it. I think Robbie Savage was on Match of the Day too, saying he sort of read from his lips, though, saying it's amazing. And it was amazing. I wouldn't say it was more emotional than some of the others, but it certainly felt.
It has been a remarkable thing how the tributes have spread everywhere and really how much emotion has been behind them. But
football can be very good sometimes in things like that. Fans get a lot of stick on here and in other places just for their bad behaviour, so they should all be applauded warmly for all the sterling efforts to pay tribute to Gary Speed.
Indeed so. Well, that brings us to the end of part two. Still to come, Fernando Duarte joins us on the line. We have a bit of a chat about Italy and any other stuff too. All right, now, continental football, eh? Paris Saint-Germain. They got a win this weekend, James Horncastle. But that hasn't stopped rumours that Rafa Benitez is about to be Taking over from Kumbuare on the Paris Saint-Germain bench.
Indeed, I think there was a report coming out of Al Jazeera which suggesting that Benitez had been approached.
Ooh.
Obviously, Paris Saint-Germain have links with Al Jazeera. Their president used to work for them.
Are they not kind of co-owners of Al Jazeera?
Yeah, I guess QSI, the Qatar Sport Investment Fund, which bought the club, has links with Al Jazeera. But it's kind of since been denied by various sources within France. Claude Makélélé is also, I think you touched upon that last week,
as a
sort of interim appointment. Leonardo, why don't you just step down yourself? You know, he didn't do too bad a job at Inter, did he?
Really, that's an interesting point of view.
I've always had a bit of an issue with people saying, oh, he was, a bit of a jokey, someone who was, you know, riding on the seat of his pants. But I think he took the job very seriously when he was Inter. I think he won, of the 21 games he had available to him, he won 17. Okay, he got caught with his pants down, I guess, against Schalke when he decided not to shut up shop and shore things up. But yeah, he won a Coppa Italia. He finished second. I mean, if you look at where Inter are now, we might get to that in a minute. He worked miracles with that team that last 6 months. Particularly when you consider, you know, where they were under Benitez, where they are now. They need to rally. But I don't think he will. I mean, he likes the high life. He likes being the director, pulling all the strings.
All right. Well, fascinating. We'll keep our eye on that whole PSG situation. Now, you mentioned Italy. And Inter, who are on course to miss out on a Champions League place for the first time in a decade now, another defeat this weekend.
13 points adrift of third place. They lost to Udinese. Pazzini shanked a penalty over the bar. And I was watching it on Sky Italia, and it was interesting because I think it was Fabio Caressa who was commenting. He immediately likened it to one of Beckham's, maybe the Portugal one, where the divot went and it just went over the bar.
Yeah.
I think Inter's... after, 12 games? They've never had so few points at this stage since 1946, 47 or something like that. Schneider, during the international break, whilst he was with Holland, obviously, said that, you know, perhaps the principal reason why Inter are doing so poorly is that the starting 11's good, but the reserves aren't good enough. But last week, all the sort of these new young kids did it. They've now since been partying and they've been whipped.
All right. Well, Javier Zanetti, not one of the young kids, got his first red card.
First red card in 548 games in Serie A. He has been sent off in Coppa Italia
before, in
99.
What was it? A brutal studs-up challenge, I think.
What, this one against Udinese? Yeah. Desperate defending in the box.
What I really wanted to talk about, well, actually a couple of things. One was the brilliant Parma-Palermo game, which I tuned into last night. Absolutely riveting action.
Yeah.
You could see, 5% of the pitch?
Well, it's funny because the Serie A action started on Friday night with Milan against Genoa, and that had to be part suspended for a few minutes because there were clashes outside the ground and tear gas came over. Visibility was poor in that game. And then the last game of the weekend, Parma-Palermo was, you know, the fog. It's like snowy fog.
You couldn't see a thing. Anything. You really couldn't see a thing, which is not an uncommon thing in Parma in at this time of year. So it's just ridiculous they should have been playing on a Sunday night. But but there you go, eh? TV money.
TV money. Yeah.
One of the other things I wanted to talk about was that extraordinary goal for Cagliari by the new Aspria.
Ibarbo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Woof.
He did Lega l'Italia down on the right-hand side and then kind of went past another player right on the byline, then another one, then
went past
the goalkeeper.
He was like, you know, that the Tasmanian devil when he just kind of whirls around with kind of limbs flying out. He did that for about 30 seconds, down around the corner flag and then in, always looking like he was about to fall over.
Yeah.
He has this incredibly kind of gangly, as I say, Sprilier-esque quality. He's a Colombian as well, isn't he?
Well, they said if Messi had scored that goal, we'd all would be going crazy about it.
Seek it out. What's his name? Segundo...
I remember his name is just Ibarbo.
It's Segundo something something.
But he was most unimpressed after scoring it. He, no sort of Balotelli-esque, the big hump, because I've just scored a brilliant goal. And James, I bet you want me to ask you about Roma having three players sent off.
Yeah.
Did you see Bojan sending off?
Oh, poor chap.
He jumped and saved it, kind of Suarez-like.
But he's too short to head it, I think. Is that the issue? No, but it was worse than Suarez, wasn't it? I mean, it was like he was playing volleyball
save.
Or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he tore his shirt off after it. Not very good.
So they went to Fiorentina. a club who've had real problems, but have since appointed, well, who appointed...
Delia Rossi, yeah, former Lazio manager.
A nemesis of Roma.
Yeah. Famously dived into the fountain of the Gianicolo, which Roma fans now pee in.
And supposedly before he dived in as well, because he said, I will swim in the fountain at midnight if we win the derby. And then they won, and presumably all the Roma fans bombed up in their motorinis and unleashed hell. Anyway, but he did swim, and a 3-0 win against a Roma team that ended up with just 8 men.
Yeah.
Collapse. Do you think that Luis Enrique is going to be there much longer?
Well, Franco Baldini, who's obviously left his general manager position to take over the project at Roma, he was the one who insisted on appointing Enrique. And Roma, they have this new owner, new philosophy, new culture, whereby they're not going to be Italian, so to speak. They're not going to sack people on a whim. They're going to stick by it. It's a long-term project. Enrique himself said, oh, I'm going to have to go home to my family and talk about this. But he said, at the same time, he didn't say he'd give up. But the next game's against Juventus. I feel he's really been quite unfortunate in the sense that Nicolas Berdiso, their first-choice centre-back's out for the season. Simon Kjær, frequently injured or suspended. Obviously, Juan was suspended because he's got sent off yesterday. And then also Gabby Heinze. I think he threw an elbow at Gamberini, and that's going to be trial by TV, so he might be out as well.
So they got Gago, Bojan and Juan are all out this weekend, and when they take on Juventus, who are the most devastating force in Serie A right now. Now, let's conclude, though, today's Football Weekly, by dialing up Fernando Duarte. Fernando, how are you doing?
Hi, James, how are you?
Very well, thank you. And yourself?
I'm fine, a very sad weekend, but, you know, these things happen.
Well, they do. A fabulous quote that Sergio Paredes tweeted. I don't know if this is true or not, but he quotes Socrates from 1983 saying, I would like to die on a Sunday and that Corinthians win the title that same day. Is that true, Fernando? Did he actually say that?
Many of the quotes attributed to him, he probably said that. I mean, Socrates was a passion for football, especially for Corinthians. You know, he was his club. And that's one of the reasons why his commentator career never really took off, because he could never be impartial towards Corinthians.
Right.
There was a famous story that he was going to comment on a game, and Corinthians was playing in a small stadium, and he went to the supporters to jump with them before the match. So, you know, the man was a legend in our character.
How much will he be missed in Brazil? How big a figure was he in the kind of folklore of football there?
Well, unfortunately, due to to his flirting with alcohol, he was a bit far away from the scene, but he still wrote a column in a Brazilian politics magazine. He was pretty much loved because he was one of the footballers that basically used his head, not only to try to put the ball in the net. You know, the guy was an intellectual. He also spoke about things people weren't very, very much happy to talk about. He criticized the directors, he criticized the FA and the way the Brazilian football was developed on and off the pitch. A character like that will always be missed. Not only the player, not only the fantastic storyteller. I'll tell you something, man. If one day I could sit down and talk, tell the stories that guy could say, and I also got pissed with him in Leeds, and it was brilliant.
During his Garforth Town experience.
Exactly. And that was the conversation in which he told me one of the few things that I never knew about him, that he was never able to watch the famous Brazil-Italy game in 1982. He never had the guts to watch it again on videotape.
Fernando, is there a sense as well in Brazil that Brazil loses a part of that old kind of Seleção style, that kind of happy-go-lucky, you know, the kind of the cultural cliche that we have about Brazilian football, which is maybe not the case with the team anymore?
Well, he was certainly one of the last defenders of that style. He said that he was one of the guys who said that defeat to Italy, for example, killed a chapter of Brazilian football. There are a lot of presidents, a lot of directors and coaches started saying, okay, that fantastic style didn't work. We didn't win the trophy, so let's be pragmatic and let's be more open to European, you know, tactical discipline. Just before the last World Cup, he told me that Spain was the only team that never made him fall asleep on his couch when he was watching football. So that says a lot.
And Corinthians, you mentioned them securing the Brazilian title yesterday in a dramatic finale to the season.
Yeah, it was the third time in a row, actually, that the Brazilian season came to the wire. And Corinthians yesterday was much more comfortable than Fluminense last season, certainly than Flamengo, but still, they could lose the title because the last round was played between was all made of derby. So Corinthians played Palmeiras, their fiercest rivals, while Vasco, still chasing them, played Flamengo. And Flamengo chasing a Libertadores place. So it was interesting. The Corinthians were never actually in trouble yesterday. because they seem to have the match under control. And Vasco, for a few moments, was leading Flamengo. They thought, well, if a goal happens there, we're going to pick them by a point. But Ronaldinho kind of like had one of his best games in the last few weeks, to be honest. He kind of like hit a very good pass, and Flamengo managed to get a draw and gain the Libertadores playoff.
So, but anyway, Corinthians take the title. Will they be celebrate by signing up Carlos Tevez again, or is that definitively gone?
No, they certainly have the means. I mean, it's a huge club. It's the second biggest amount of supporters in Brazil, but they're certainly in much better financial situation than Flamengo. Well, let's remember that they're going to be the club who's going to own the stadium, the São Paulo Stadium for the World Cup, the place where the opening game will be played. Basically, they'll be given this by the government. They will be certainly with some bucks to spend, and we all know that Carlos Tevez wants to come back. Let's see what City says about that.
Magnificent. Fernando, thank you very much for that, and look forward to speaking to you again soon.
No problem. Always a pleasure. It's a shame that, you know, we had to talk about a very, very sad chapter today. I mean, when I talk about Socrates, I also kind of like feel sorry about the way he departed. But then again, that's the way he always lived, giving two fingers to establish authorities and to best advice.
Yeah, very true. Fernando, thanks a lot then. We'll catch up with you soon.
Pleasure, James.
Fernando Duarte. Well, that brings us to the end of Football Weekly today, unless anybody wants to add anything at this point.
No, I'm just looking forward to Martin O'Neill signing Emil Heskey, Mozzie Izzet and Steve Guppy for Sunderland. Onwards and upwards.
Marvellous. Tom Lutz.
Yeah, bye.
Bye to you too. And James Horncastle.
See you soon.
Magnificent stuff. Thanks, guest producer Ian. And you, the listener. We're back on Thursday with our roundup of the exciting midweek Champions League action and more. See you then.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio. The Guardian has partnered with audible.co.uk to offer listeners a free audiobook when you sign up for a 1 month, no commitment trial of the Audible service. Audible has over 50,000 audiobook titles available to download. Go to guardian.co.uk/audible for further details.